supposed to swear anymore. Like, I'm really working on my swearing right now because I don't know where it came from. I don't know if I've always swore as much as I do, but I feel... Have you ever seen the movie Aviator with Howard Hughes?
No.
You should watch it. I think that's who I'm becoming. It's a Leo DiCaprio movie, and Howard Hughes is, you know, he was an eccentric young rich man, you know, got obviously money from his family, but then, you know, everyone thought he was a rich playboy who was never going to make anything of himself. And then he basically revolutionized the movie industry, revolutionized the air, you know, the flight industry. And the deeper he got in his progress, like the more removed he got from the world and the crazier he got. And I often think I'm becoming that person. And part of that is cussing. Do you swear?
Yeah. Here and there. I'm not as bad as possible, but
I'm awful. And I don't find myself to be very like crass person. I'm not like a bad dude. Caleb says that you're sexy, by the way.
Thanks, Caleb. I appreciate that. I think he's just stroking my ego because I beat him in the Decafit relay.
Do you think that you've gotten sexier with age?
For sure. High school, college, definitely looking back at pictures, just, my shit wasn't together. Oh, there we go. Already.
I think you look pretty good. Like, your face is looking leaner and more defined than it usually is.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to put this together. When did we first meet?
Perhaps Tahoe, the first year Tahoe was there, the day before the race, they had like a, I don't know if it was a meet and greet thing, but they, like, people were just walking around festival area, and pretty sure I had a green shirt that I found with this beast, like, eye, the Spartan helmet, but it was like a black, it was very minimal ink on the shirt, but it looked like the Spartan head, and then you were prancing around. I have the picture somewhere. Pretty sure it's Tahoe, though.
It sounds good. So this is 2015?
Yeah, probably the first year.
So this is in my notes. I'm like, how long have we known each other? And it's going on 10 years almost.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And I want to, like, anybody who's not, you know, fully up to date on Bubbles, we're going to have to go into the weeds and then we're going to come out of them and try to get that 10,000 foot view. But you just recently won Decastrong World Championships in a fashion that I don't think anybody expected, anybody knew was coming. I was flabbergasted to the point where, I'm not going to lie, I was not like entirely invested at all in Decafit. And then when I found out that you won, my weekend changed. I had already set the world record for Stockholm, and I was like, that's lame. That was coming. But this is true sport. Like, this is one of those kind of moments where, I don't know, like when you see like the Kansas City Chiefs just get wrecked. They had like an undefeated record, and then you're just like, what the hell is going on here? And it kind of sparked my flame again for sport. It did. Because right now, at least in my world, it's not like I'm on maintenance mode, but it's off season, and, you know, my sport is kind of predestined at some point. But yours was epic.
Thank you. You're like the Yankees, right? You just win every year and expect it to win. So if someone knocks you off, that's like big news. But if you win, it's not a big deal because you're supposed to win. Where I haven't won anything big yet. So, and I mean, watching the video, I've probably watched it 1,000 times over. Just the bike walking up to it, setting the seat, jumping off in first, and the roar of the crowd, like, it still gets me all like butterflies inside and teary eyed. And like, this is what Disney makes movies out of. Not that I think Disney's picking up my
story.
Like
Rudy.
It's freaking awesome.
You pulled off a Rudy. So
yeah, you reset the bike seat in the time that the guys were all out going crazy on it. You were still resetting your height of the bike seat, hopped on, and then beat them up. Is nuts.
So where did, before we get back to that race, like, where did Bubbles come from?
Well, everyone asks. So way back when, in 2011, I did Warrior Dash with some college friends, And as I recently posted, I was there for the beer, and then it seemed like a cool thing to do. So my buddies that I did it with were like, hey, you want to do this other thing? It's much harder because Warrior Dash is like 3 miles, and it's at Wyndham Mountain in New York. So mountain climbing for someone that played field sports their whole life was that
you're 3 miles, right?
Yeah, and I wrestled also as a heavyweight. So a little bit of running, but nothing mountainous. So that kicked my ass, but my friends that I did that with wanted to do something harder. So then we signed up for Tough Mudder in November in New Jersey. And then we actually trained for it because that was a lot longer. 13 miles to us, not having running backgrounds was like, it could have been a marathon or a 100-miler for our experience. So we trained up for it. And then we decided we wanted to, the three of us committed. We went to Party City on a Friday night and got some costumes, and it was November, so we bought some Santa costumes and wore those to Tough Mudder. They had a costume contest. We won the costume contest, which the prize was a season pass, but for the whole next year. So then the next year, we went to the first Tough Mudder with more Party City pieced together costumes, won another season pass. And eventually, like, we went to so many of these Tough Mudders, and we just kept spending all this money on Friday nights at Party Cities. I mean, like, we need something that's going to last more than one race, because after you go through mud, it doesn't really last. We talked about masks and things, but most of the masks in Halloween costumes you can't see out of and you can't breathe out of, which takes away from the opportunity to, like, run. Even though Tough Mudder wasn't a race at that point for us, we were still competing against ourselves to go through fast and have fun. And then in 2014, around Halloween time, I was in the Halloween store and found a mask, which is listed as a chinless clown mask. And it has eyes, and it fits to my head very well, but my mouth sticks out so I can breathe.
It's very Slipknot-esque.
It is. I used to like Slipknot when I played football, right before you go out on the field and crush skulls.
Whoever falls out of love with Slipknot is the
real question. I just don't listen to it frequently anymore. But
every day? Went to
a couple of their concerts. Not very often. But so I found this mask, and then it debuted. I finished the Killington Ultra Beast in September of 2014. And then a month later, Ohio had the trifecta in a day. So you did the beast in the morning, the super in the afternoon, the sprint in the evening, or the later afternoon. And that was Bubbles' debut. And I wore the mask, which turned out to be good because it was freezing. There was hail. And that day ended up being just as hard as the Killington Ultra Beast because of all the weather and us not being prepared. But the mask saved me because the hail was hitting us in the heads, and this rubber mask was like kind of protecting me. But I spent a lot of time out there, and then I wore it to the next race, and people started seeing it, and I just started like goofing around because I was still like not competing. I was doing fun, like open waves. And then it developed a name and a personality and this whole like separate persona. And then, I mean, this is probably like my 9th or 10th actual mask, because the rubber deteriorates and melts, especially in the summer. But I just keep picking them up every year and get a fresh one. And it's known. I've worn it in multiple countries. And during that clown epidemic in like 2015 and 16, people were telling me I was going to get shot because you can't do that. But I got
clown epidemic. Is this like attached to the movie Joker?
No, I think it was it. So there was like just clowns showing up in different places, scaring people. And I was like, I'm just a friendly clown. I'm just here to do my thing.
No
and
such thing.
I went to a couple races, wouldn't let me in like at registrations. So I like had to not wear it there. Battle Frog in Canada. There was even a Spartan race and a Tough Mudder in different cities. Like somebody made a big fuss.
That seems like such a Canadian thing.
They didn't let you
do.
Race
they're,
with
they're like,
mask
there's
on?
A clown here. Everybody run. Like only Canadians would be so petrified that you're not allowed to go up to a race with a clown mask on. Like that's their national beast animal.
It was Quebec, and the Ontario didn't have a
French
problem.
Canadians
but
are
Quebec, pricks. Yeah, I've noticed.
Everyone says
they're not
that.
Very nice, but yeah. So I've done every race in the mask. I did the Tahoe Ultra with the mask on. I've done sprints, supers. I've worn it for hour chunks of World's Toughest Mudder, and I can do anything in it. There's really nothing that I can't do.
Do you ever get like a little bit exhausted by the alter ego? Like sometimes I look at myself and I have the sheriff badge tattoo and all this kind of stuff. Everyone's like the sheriff. And like, that's just like a tattoo on my chest. Like, you are wearing this thing on your face at all times. And like, do you ever want to separate, or do you treat it kind of like Bruce Wayne does Batman? Like, do you just show up as Batman or Bubbles, and then when you're in real life, you're Bruce Wayne?
I guess that's a good description, and probably yes, because I can take the mask off. So as I've gotten more competitive, I've worn it less and less, and I usually try to pack it because people want pictures with it or want me to scare their friends in like the festival area. So I usually have it in my bag, but I haven't I don't really wear it that much anymore. Wear your sheriff badge logo or tattoo. You can't really take that off, and you're always who you are. So
do you have any beef? Do you have any beef with Toughest Batman? Because Toughest Batman is an OCR guy, and he wears a Batman mask the entire time he's racing.
Have you beat the shit out of that guy?
Have you guys crossed paths?
I've never seen him before. I mean, I may have. I just didn't realize it. Is it like the what's that guy? The Bat Dad mask. It's just like a half mask thing. Is that what he wears? This guy wears.
Yeah,
that guy's jokes are hilarious. He messes with his kids all the time.
Hey, Brian.
This guy runs OCR. He's sponsored by like Mud Gear and Endure Athlete. But also, I have your world record passing everybody up on the bike here loaded. If we want to watch it,
oh, hold off on that for a second.
Okay,
Ryan, I just want to give you a heads up. I think your audio is going through the computer rather than your microphone.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you drinking booze right now, Bubbles?
No. No, I ran out of Builder, so I had to settle for a power cut.
Whoa! We don't show that on the show.
Sorry.
All right? That's sacrilege.
No,
there we go.
Yeah, now
I drank
fine.
My Builder too fast, so.
We'll send you another gift bundle. If you contact Ryan, we'll send you over the whole bundle for free.
Oh,
I really want to save the whole race thing for a certain period of time, if you guys don't mind, because I really want to, like, I think that's such a polarizing experience that it will drag us away from the real kind of story here. So your gym is called Underdog Athletics, and I don't know if it's specifically geared towards what I'm talking about right now, but is it because you consider yourself to be the underdog and you're training with that kind of mentality and spirit?
I feel like I've always been had that underdog mentality where I had to work harder than other people that didn't have other people had more talent. So in football, I was not the best at any position. So I was a backup at everything. So I was like too small to be like an offensive lineman, but I was the sixth guy. So I got to fill in at every position. And I was not good enough or fast enough to be like a wide receiver. So I was like a backup tight end, and I was the backup punter and the backup everything. So I loved football, and that I was useful because as a, like a utility player, you can put me anywhere. I played lacrosse on Long Island, which is, as you know, like the hotbed of lacrosse.
Hardcore.
Baltimore is also good too.
Hardcore.
But so I went to college as a walk-on at a D3 school, and I didn't get recruited pretty much anywhere. So I walked onto a roster that had 60 tryouts and made the team and was able to have that underdog mentality and tryouts and work hard and make it up to the starting lineup for my first game as a freshman, where as a senior in high school, I didn't even start. So all my successes have all tied back to just outworking the competition, so that way I can put myself in a position to be even with them if they have more talent. So I really embody that, and I really the underdog stories of sport, as we mentioned a couple, like really tug at my heartstrings, and it gives me a chance to like feel like I have a chance. And then
Rudy,
I can pass that on to my clients or whoever I'm working with, even if they're just general population clients and they're not they don't consider themselves athletes.
You called me that day. You called me that day and you're like, Hunter, what should I do with this? And I gave you my idea around it because you are a much more relatable human being than anybody else in this space. Not like you've got like a dog shit body or any of these kind of things. Like you've just taken like a raw, like I'll admit, like when I was growing up, I got the most potential award every single season in all my sports because they're like, dude, you have so much talent, but you're just a lazy POS. Like you suck. You party too much. You distract the team. you're annoying, but you're very talented. You came from the other side. Like, I'll never forget. I think his name is Ben or Brian. This dude that I ran cross country with, he was the number one kid on the team. And then I transferred schools and showed up at their school, and I just dominated him. And I'd be smoking weed at practice and come like, show up drunk. And he was just decimated on the inside. Just like, I don't get it. Like, who is this kid? Like, why is he doing this? And this kid was the captain of the team. He trained harder. He put everything together. And you, like, part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show today is because you use this lifestyle and this position that you were in, and you just stayed with it. And then you won one of the more competitive hybrid events in the world right now. And that's crazy to me. Like, I was literally on my phone, like, shaking. And like, I think you probably at many times probably had to look at yourself and be like, is this still worth it? Like, did you have that conversation with yourself? Because as I was saying, like, you and I met in 2015, you've been doing this since 2011. Did that ever hit you where you were like, what am I doing?
Yeah. I mean, over and over, I started just doing lots of, after I found Spartan and it was competitive, that kind of scratched that itch, because playing college sports, you leave. If you look at all the people that play college sports, at least with me, it's like 5 years later, they're all overweight and they're working these high stress jobs and they have money, but their fitness and their lifestyle is like crap. And then they start figuring out, hey, I need to exercise again, and kind of like course correct. But finding like Tough Mudder was fun for a bit, but then I was like, I'm not competing. I played semi-pro football for a few years, and you're just playing with a bunch of alcoholics that don't give a shit about the rest of their life. At least that's how our team was. And a lot great guys, but
like local rugby clubs.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are fun too. But then with Spartan Race, I started racing that. So I was in open and then elite, cause I was on the next step up and finishing like bottom third and then working my way up the ranks. And, you know, I tried to figure out how was I going to be as good as these smaller, faster guys, because this is a running event and I'm not a runner by like my fitness background. So trying to figure out, I related a lot to you because you're bigger than everyone else as well. And you were succeeding at a high level. So trying to copy what you did. And I'm like, oh, you had Richard Diaz on one of your podcasts or something a long time ago. I'm like, I need to work with that coach. So I seeked him out. I worked with him. I went to his clinics. I ended up working with him specifically. And he's like, you got to specialize. And I picked the thing most opposite my natural talents, which was ultras. And then he worked with me there. I was able to get 75 miles at World's Toughest Mudder after, on my fourth try, once I started working with him. And then, he's like, you know, whenever you're ready to like give up this ultra shit, we can focus on what you're actually like built for, which is the short, fast stuff, which I missed the boat on the, TMX. I think I would have done pretty well at that, but I was still trying to run the ultras. I did the Iceland World Championship in 2018 and finished seventh overall, third place amongst the Americans. So that was like another like highlight. Still not a podium, but like pretty cool to be top 10 in a world championship. And then the next year I went back to stadiums.
Just to give some people some context, like in the Elite 15, not Elite 15, in the Elite races at Tahoe, like what place would you come in?
150th.
That's hard.
Worked all year for that 150th place.
I know. Listen, dude, I was crippled because that was like my kryptonite. I was always first, second, or third every single race. Like, I never raced off the podium, and I often was first in the majority of the season, like in all of the pro events leading up, like the championships leading up. And then I go to Tahoe and I take between. In Tahoe, the best I ever got was fifth place twice. I got third place in Vermont, and I got the worst place I ever got was seventh. And I would just sit there, and it would crush me. It would crush me. And so, like, I'm sitting here thinking for you, you work all year, and then you come 150th place. Like, what does that feel like?
Well, it was fun. But I also – I knew I wasn't competing for a podium, but that was my measuring stick, I guess, because all year, like, you show up to a local race, it really depends on who shows up. And then you go to a world championship where everyone's showing up. Well, granted, Spartan in those days wasn't pulling the international field that it is now. There was internationals, but not like it is now, and also is in America. But that was like, okay, cool. Like, did I progress over last year? And that was – then I could look back and have, like, measurable data Like, I felt better. I placed more higher generally on any given weekend. And then look back year over year and like, okay, I placed a little bit better. Because the times, as you know, the courses are different, so you can't really compare times. I did CrossFit for a few years. The Open was a lot of fun. But handstand push-ups would always be in there. And I'm like, all right, well, there's my kryptonite. I can't walk on my hands and I can't do handstand push-ups. But
dude, listen, everybody knows that real athletes walk on their feet, not their fucking hands, okay? I'm going to start cussing again. This is BS. Not going to practice walking over staircases.
So I guess I just try to find different things to measure progress year over year because – Like you said, I didn't have like, okay, I won this race or I almost won this race. It was miles at World's Toughest Mudder for many years. Then the CrossFit Open, like percentage of overall. So seeing that improve each year. And then like my finishing place at like Tahoe or OCR World Championships or stuff like that. So I just kind of kept doing everything and on end, waiting for something that really built for me really. And then once that stadiums were always a blast and I did that whole series. And I finished top 10 in the series for the year, but most of my finishes were like in the teens, like 10 to 15 usually.
Yep.
So any given race, people show up and I just went to all of them.
Hey, Ryan, pull up that video now. Let's see this.
Yes, sir.
Let's see bubbles in action.
I'm excited. All right, stiff. Hang on. Let me see.
So this is DecaStrong World Championships. And on the far right, you got Rylan, who's already won at least one or two of the titles. Then you've got, in the middle, you've got Ryan Kent. And these guys are already on the bike doing work. And Kevin pulls up. It takes about 5 seconds to adjust his seat, and then he goes turbo right here. Now look at the pace of his legs in comparison. Look at the size of his legs also in comparison to the other athletes.
You got thick thighs compared to Kent and Magida here.
Well, as I learned a couple of years ago,
Kent and
right?
Rylan. No,
that's, right?
It's Kent. Rylan. It's Kent and Rylan.
Yeah. And then you're off. So then you're not dead.
You had the dead balls after that, right?
Yeah, the video cuts the I led after the dead balls and then I led after the tank and then I finished my burpees first. So,
wow.
So, I mean, look, how long had those guys been on the bike by the time you got there?
15 seconds at least, because I let them get ahead of me on the ski erg and then I did all my splits. I didn't do Ryan and Rylan splits, but looking at they were on the bike when I still had to do another 20 meters of farmer carry. And then I had to run the 15 meters from the beginning of the farmer carry to the bike, adjust the seat. So I figured about 15 seconds, maybe a little more.
And how much did you beat them by?
I think overall 12 to 15 seconds over Rylan. And then Ryan was 10 seconds behind him, and him and Marcus Wallace like crossed at the same time, but I think that's about it.
So who's Marcus Wallace?
He's a guy from Ryan's neck of the woods out in the middle Midwest. And I think he podiumed in the mile. He's a tall dude. He's taller than me. He kind of showed up this year. He was supposed to be, I think he was in the Elite 15 last year for High Rocks, but he missed, he was sick or something. This is the first time I've ever met him. I've heard his name a lot.
Does he have dark hair?
6 months. He's tall. He wears glasses. He has darker hair. Yeah.
You want me to search him?
I'm looking at him right now.
Yeah. I don't know how tall he is, but he's probably like 6'4", 6'5", which
that's a big boy.
6'2 and a quarter. So anyone taller than me is very noticeable.
Wow. Well, I mean, this is pretty crazy. Like, it's – I did swear. I definitely did swear, but I had to. I think that DECA actually has some cool things going on. I personally have just watched sports like rise and fall so many times that I'm just done. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to invest in something that's going to fall apart again. And the difference between Decafit and Hyrox, like, not even from the level of professionalism, I just, from my standpoint, I'm like, I'm investing in Hyrox. Like, that's the poker table that I play at. And let everyone else do whatever the heck they want. But I do think that Decafit presents a really cool opportunity for the sport of hybrid, you know, fitness racing, all that kind of stuff. I do honestly say that. So, you know, when you show up there and you take down these like two titans, like, did you know leading up to this thing, you're like, I have a chance? Or were you just like, I'm going to show up and see what happens?
No, I 100% knew I had a chance. I've had the second best deck of strong time for like more time than I think anyone else. Because
who has the number one? Rylan?
Rylan right now.
Yeah.
So 2 years ago, Ryan Corning. Everyone's in hybrids named Ryan, as it was with Spartan. So this guy, Ryan Corning from Jacksonville, he had the record for a while. After Spartan Games, like, your time was the best, but then Ryan Corning broke that, or he was either the first or second person to break it, and it was like by 5 seconds or whatever. So he had that time for quite a while. And then I got my time down to within a few seconds of him. He broke his record. Then I got it down within 1 second. And then Kent.
Did you guys do deadlifts for 225 still?
No, there's no deadlifts. That was DECA heavy or something. Like, that was just a mix that Yancey put in for Spartan Games.
So my time doesn't really even count.
No, you did the DECA strong that is now in one of the Spartan Games, but you did, as it is now, you did it once, but then they made it harder in after that.
Well, the way that we did it is we did it once in Vermont. I keep on saying I'm not allowed to say that either. We did it once in Vermont, and there was a bar involved.
It wasn't.
And we had to do 225 deadlifts. And then the next time that we did it, it was done on the grass.
Might be this one.
Because I don't know.
The tank has wheels, so the grass doesn't make a difference as much as like a regular sled.
No, it was a regular sled. We didn't have tanks.
Oh, yeah.
Was there a third time we did it? I'll go back.
I can't remember now, but I'm pretty sure.
From you.
Yeah, so when you guys did this and you put an 1159 up, that's when Ryan Atkins' seat was not proper for his bike. And so he was pissed because you beat him, but his seat, he like tested his height on one seat, and then the race bike was put together differently. I don't know what season that was. I don't remember when it was, but that's what I remember.
What's the record down to now?
10:33.
So you guys took a minute and a half off our times?
Specialized training. Yeah.
Wow. That's good.
So last year I had this. Kent broke the record at Worlds. He got 11:10, and I was pissed because I had a bad showing at World Championships last year. My feet, I couldn't get them into the rower because the straps were tied too tight, and then I tried to make up the time right away and blew myself up and then finished in sixth. But a month later, we hosted a DECA Strong at Underdog Fitness, and I hit an 11:11, so 1 second off of Kent's time, which he beat everybody by like 20 seconds at World Championships in 22. So then I had the second best time there, Kent, yeah, in last year. So I caught up almost 1 second within his record. And then this year, a couple of people broke that record. Rylan, 10:33. I have a 10:48 PR now, which I did a week before Worlds. And I ran 11:04 at Worlds, but it was over like 80 to 100 meters. So this was much more spread out for viewing and the setup. So my transition time, which is one thing that I measure, when I ran 11:11, my transition time was 19 seconds. My transition time at World Championships was 43 seconds. So would have been closer to Ryland's record.
How do you feel about Kent's performance at Worlds? He says he was sick. Do you believe in that BS?
I don't like to shit talk anybody.
Tell us about it. This is a safe space.
Safe space.
No one's listening. It's just us.
I'm not recording, and I'm not going to post this all over the internet.
No, he, I mean, he had a, he was sick. I don't know. The extent seems pretty – they talked about it. Him and Rich talked about it for weeks. So I'm sure they had something going. But I think everybody at Worlds – not everybody. A lot of people came in sick, and I was really fortunate that I did everything I needed to leading in to not come in sick. And like you say, you race whoever's there that day. Like Magida didn't come in on Sunday for the strong either. And I really wanted to face him because I haven't beaten him before, and I figured that was my best shot. But I don't know. Everyone, I'm not making fun of Kent. I just, all my athletes, we got a house together, and they're all like, hey, I only did this because of X, Y, Z. And I'm like, everyone has excuses. You got to perform at the time. No one's going to remember if someone else showed up or got hurt or whatever. Like when Caleb was in the Elite 15 or whatever before it was called that, and he hit his knee or something on the tank and then dropped out World Championships in Chicago. But let's bust his chops because we have good rapport.
Because Caleb's a pussy. Yeah, I don't – even if I was dying, I wouldn't tell you guys I would compete. And if you beat me, I especially wouldn't tell you guys that I was dying.
I think
that's my company policy.
There's such a culture, at least in OCR, with if someone doesn't perform, then, okay, let's check the sob story on social media tomorrow as to why they didn't win or whatever. But it's not just one person. That's just like
conduct. I think it's the most unsportsmanlike conduct you can do. Like, I'd rather have somebody cuss me out to my face than let me beat them and then be like, oh, yeah, I totally would have done it if I didn't have cancer and a strained back. And I'm like,
well, technically I had the flu, so that's why you beat me. But if I didn't have the flu and I didn't have a sprained ankle,
that's just diminishing other people's results. Like, the worst time I've ever run in a Hyrox was 2021 Hyrox National Championships in America. I shit my pants multiple times the days leading up to it, but nobody knew. I still won. It was my worst time. I was like pooing out like hot brown water out of my butt constantly. And it was just like, this is terrible. This is so bad. I had to get IVs the following day. And then I showed up and I felt like death, but nobody knew. And, you know, even if I lost, but you know what? It's sport. It's part of what we do. Sometimes you're overtrained. Sometimes you're undertrained. Sometimes you're sick. Big thing of what I say to people is being a professional athlete is a career of mitigating risk. And the more you can mitigate risk, the longer you can train, the more you can train, the more likelihood you have to succeed. Hmm. So what do you think it was that got you where you were this year? Because, you know, it sounds like from your story that you finally decide to let go of things that weren't serving you. Like, you let go of ultras and stuff. Like, do you think you could have been a far better athlete if you'd been in this category longer, or did it take like a couple specific years of training to get you here? Like, obviously you're heavyweight. So, you know, I'm aware that big people pull big watts, but you certainly, like, it seems like you had a strategy going into this thing and you executed perfectly.
Are you a big fan of like doing 2-hour workouts and just going hours on end on the gym?
Well, I mean, all those years of ultra running, I was so used to those long, super long workouts. But
yeah,
I think over the last couple years, like since COVID, I've kind of tried to figure, not necessarily redefine myself. Like, I still love running Spartan races and having fun and racing, but now I have more athletes that I work with.
You're not here to have fun.
Well, that's what I was finally able to, like, okay, I can go run a competitive race without getting mentally beat down that I didn't win or podium. And stepping from elite to age group was a big step because, you know, ego wise, like, oh, well, I've been in elite my whole life, so I can't run age group. But I'm also not training for any of that. So if I go to the local Spartan race and like run an age group and compete and take a podium, even if it's not first, like, okay, that would have killed me years ago because I didn't get 15th place in elite, and now I'm winning age group against the JV squad, or there's all the different mental games you play with yourself. But for the last few years, focus on DECA. I've done Hyroxes. I like Hyroxes, but the last couple of years I've been dealing with some foot injuries, so I can't run as much as I want to for Hyrox, which is 5 miles. So what can I do instead? Lots of machine work and really just dialing in these movements. And with any other sport, like I played ball sports my whole life. And yeah, the first time you pick up a lacrosse stick, you're going to hit in the face with the ball because you don't know how to put your stick. But after you play a few years, you can catch and throw both hands against the wall behind the back, and it's effortless, and it becomes automatic. So dialing in the movements, like, not that it's exciting to train the same 10 movements over and over and over, but finding different creative ways to keep improving without making it monotonous. And also, you know, to Ryan asked about super long workouts. My race was 11 minutes and 4 seconds. So I don't need a 2-hour workout anymore. I can get that base conditioning in less than an hour, do more mobility, and I don't have to put in the super long training blocks because I'm not going for a 5-6 hour ultra run. And then just figuring out the cycles of training to build volume when I'm not peaking for a race, and then just keep things sharp when it comes time to throw down. And I like the deck of fits. I have fun with them, but I'm sitting at like 34 minutes, which is not going to be top 20 roll downs.
Was it like under 20, 39 now? 30, I mean?
Yeah, like the top guys are under 30. Ooh. So, yeah, I'll keep getting faster at that, but that's not my goal. It's just fun to do. And also I'm building my brand. And I have a lot of athletes that are much better runners, so they're competing in fit. So I'm going there to support them and then pick up somebody and run a team's race and win that, because my skill set plays very well to finding a fast runner and doing all the legwork.
I was going to say something. I'll pose this to you. Like, you're a shot putter, and you're trying to do decathlon. It took me a long time to let go of my ego because there's so many things going on out there. I've got ADD and I've got an ego. I'm like, I have to win Spartan Race World Championships. And I should have just let go. I could have been the dude who won everything during the season that was under 90 minutes. But then I always showed up and I just would be crushed for months afterwards. I'm like, how did I not beat these small little house cats in this race? And it destroyed me. And now it's like, there's so many things going on. There's the Go Ruck games. There's Decafit. There's CrossFit. There's
Paddle Bunker.
Everything. And like, I'm even last year, I went and did the government games in Dubai, which might as well be like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. It's a weird thing that makes no sense. And like, there's no straightforward way to win that thing. Like, I don't even know how we did so badly, because we did so well. And I was really upset with myself. And then I used that anger to go forward and set the world record again in High Rocks. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, why don't I let go of all of these things that don't serve me, put me in a mental state that really bother me? Why don't I just stick to what I'm good at? And if you ever just like looked at yourself in the mirror and said, hey, man, like, how old are you now, Bubbles?
37.
Like, you're 37 years old. You probably have about 2 to 3 years of opportunity left. And do you think to yourself, like, I'm all in, going to be the world champion of this for the next couple of years? Or do you say to yourself, you know, this is a journey. I've done this from the start, and I'm going to finish it this way.
I guess I haven't really thought that much, but to your point of like getting frustrated with not performing at everything, because as a competitor, I always want to win, even if it's board games with my wife. I'm like, just got me on this one. But I love all this stuff and the people, and I think that keeps me coming back, because I don't drink anymore, so my social needs are met by going to races. I don't have any local friends, like you say, like, oh, come out and train with me, and then someone shows up once and never comes back. Like, I train in a cave because anyone local isn't training at the level I am, or at least we're not on the same page. And then
Connecticut? All my friends
said, yeah.
What part?
I live in Cheshire, and the gym's in Wallingford. So it's central.
I know exactly where that is.
Yes.
We're doing Dry January if you want to join us. I mean, it's not very hard for you to do it. We're working with a non-alcoholic beer company called Go Brew, and we're going to be sober.
Has set it all up. Thank you, Go Brewing.
It's not very challenging for you. It just basically be you doing the same exact thing. So Maybe you should drink all January while we don't drink.
That would be challenging.
Are you sober now? Is that your, well, do you use the word sober? Or you just don't drink because you're busy doing other stuff.
Well, a couple of things. Like, I drank a lot in college, got plenty of experience. Only out as a big party school. So I was leading the charge there and lacrosse team and everything. But my dad's been a recovering alcoholic since I was 10. And then, not that I'd go through periods after college where I didn't drink for a bit. And then if like something came up and was like, oh, well, I want to drink there, then I wouldn't have a problem with it. But I just, it's easier to abstain for a long time than dabble in and out and stuff, especially like through training blocks and whatnot. And after the lacrosse Final Four, like, I guess when I was in Connecticut 2 years ago, drank there. And then after, I didn't drink for a bit after. And then that just kind of spurred on. And then last year, my dad, I went to his AA meeting for his 27th year of celebration. And then that was the last time I ever saw him. And he passed away like a month and a half later. And then I'm like, okay, well, he didn't drink for 27 years. And I really don't have, I'm not going to celebrate his life by drinking. And obviously the emotions of losing a parent is huge. But I just kind of decided I haven't really had a good reason to drink since. I'm not saying I'll never drink again, but I was like, I'm definitely not drinking right after his death and everything, just to honor him in that way. And yeah, but that hit, he's always been a big part of my athletics. He would like figure out how to get off work and drive to Brockport, New York to like watch me play like a Division III lacrosse game. Went in the middle of on like a Wednesday afternoon when he should have been working somewhere. So my success in sport has always made him proud. And I think, I don't know if you watch the YouTube live of the Deck of Strong Elite while they're doing introductions, I'm like in the back and they call me up and I'm like just teary eyed like crazy, 'cause I'm like getting myself mentally engaged and I usually like different from usual. And I was just thinking, and I'm like, my dad's going to be proud today. And I just got all emotional and start crying. I'm like, oh, well, this is the time I can't see. This is probably I'll have to settle these nerves and get out there. But I guess that plays a lot more into the role of not drinking right now than anything else.
That was a lot more thought out than I thought you'd say. Mm-hmm. I thought you were just going to be like, God, I just don't like drinking beer. I don't really have a reason not to, other than just going hard. I tried the sober thing for 5 months and 29 days.
Wow.
Didn't pan out. In reality, at this point, like you're on this high. Like, do you have an agenda that comes next? Like, do you have like a plan? Are you just gonna sit back?
You're talking more athletically or business-wise or life?
Athletically.
Athletically, I mean, I want to maintain my, like, defend my crown or whatever, and continue getting better at strong, because the whole field is gonna level up next year, I'm sure. It's going to take sub 11 to even qualify for Worlds. So I definitely want to keep my Deck a Strong title and represent it, but also continue to like get better at the running type of events. So continue to improve my mile and fit, not putting as much stock into that for World Championships, but just for my own self to progress. But also, I love the teams, and I ran, five team races at Deca Worlds. I won four of them. And the...
So you won all those world titles?
Yeah, five. I'm catching up.
Jeez. You're almost, almost with me.
I'm glad they put them all in one weekend. I'm glad they put them on one weekend.
So I'm not going to lie. I don't even know what Deca Strong is. Can you explain all the stations for people like myself and listeners who may not really understand what it is?
And is there or is there not running?
Okay. Deca Strong, no running.
Okay.
Deca Mile, each exercise station is preceded by a tenth of a mile run. And Deca Fit, each exercise station is preceded by a 500 meter run. So the Fit equals a 5K in total. The Mile equals a mile in total. Strong, no running.
So what are the strong events?
Strong events. Station one, RAM reverse lunges. So for men, you have a 55 pound weighted log and you do 30 reverse lunges. Women are 33 pounds. Station two is box jump or step overs. At the beginning, people used to jump over it. And And then we realized that's a lot of energy expenditure. So now everyone steps over it. It's 24 inches for everybody. Doesn't matter age or gender. The rower is actually number two. I think I would have this memorized. 500 meter rows, station two. Station three is the box step over. Station four is a med ball weighted sit up. Station five is a ski erg, 500 meters. Station six is a farmer carry, 100 meters, but 10 down and backs for strong. Station seven is a bike, 25 cows. Station eight is dead balls, 60 pounds over the shoulder for men, 20 times, and for women is 40. Station nine is the tank. It's 100 meter push pull, so push down 10 meters, pull back 10 meters. And then station 10 is 20 ram burpees. So it's another, the weighted log, lighter weights than the lunges, and 20 reps of that.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yes.
How do you feel? Because I thought there was a debate on best type of sled. So is it better with the wheels or like the Rogue, like Hyrox has, where it's just the flush, like almost a ski base?
I mean, it's very different. So the Hyrox one, it's the friction on the ground. Obviously, everyone that follows Hyrox knows the rug makes a huge difference, and then just the weight. Everyone can push 1,000 pounds on a AstroTurf at their local gym, but they get to Hyrox and they can't budge a 400-pound sled on this magic carpet. So that one, fatigue-wise, it's harder because it's heavy. But if you get momentum, you can keep it moving. It jacks your heart rate up either way. Then the tank or the Z-Bex, which is the new tank that they used for the World Championships, it's on wheels. Anyone can push it. The harder you push, the more magnetic resistance that's created. The way that you get faster is you build up your muscle endurance, so that way you can push it at a higher resistance, variable resistance, or you push it or pull it fast enough where the tires slide on the surface, which is why the Deca fits. The tanks are always faster there because you're on polished concrete, or the gym events, it's usually on a rubber floor or asphalt or turf. Yeah. But those all have more friction than the polished concrete, which is usually dusty.
I was going to ask about that. So, like, Hyrox, we all know, without having to, like, it's the elephant in the room, all these courses are different slightly. And they're all like, no, it's all industry standard. We're like,
is it?
Really? Is it like that with DecaFit? Like, you can go and run a 10:30 in this one, but that same exact day in a different place, it'd be like a 10:45, 11.
DecaFit's a lot more standardized because Yancey puts them all together. So it's always going to be two laps. It's always going to be the same stations and all, but the floor is usually standard to be that polished concrete.
I hate that stuff. I really hate that stuff.
But usually the shape is a square, more of a square. At Worlds, it's more of a long rectangle because of the shape of the building. But usually it's a square, so you have four corners. And
what about like the distance between on the in when you go in is the variable distance the same from course to course?
They try to make it as close to zero as possible. So you leave the course and you step into the station. You don't go into a runway like Hyrox and then pop into the station. So this, you get to station one and you step in. And if you're there early enough, you get the mats that are next to the entrance and exit. If you're there later, you got to go in more steps. So it's beneficial to get there sooner, so you get the machine or the station that's closest to the entry and exit. But you enter and exit through the same spot. So there's benefit of, you're not running through a loop where in Hyrox, it doesn't matter how soon you get there. You run more before if you get there earlier. You run more after if you get there later.
This is a totally different topic, and I put it in the notes. Probably a sensitive topic for some people, but so since you've been like in that pack that, like, you know, we were talking about earlier, 150th place at World Championships, do you ever worry about doping in your category, kind of like the people that are more so like high level age groupers, or, you know, back of the pack elite level athletes? Because in my mind, I don't really assume that a lot of the people in the Elite 15 in Hyrox, or, you know, when we were doing Spartan Race back in the day, were using stuff. But then I'd go and see these guys that were in like the age groups, or, you know, 20th to 50th place. that had like eight packs and veins coming out everywhere. And I'm like, what are these guys on?
Are you talking about Youssef, the guy from the big
that's like another guy. He would show up at the front of the start line. I like the guy, and I've got nothing against him, but
he's funny.
He's like 2% body fat. And there was a lot of guys like that. Mm-hmm. And you guys, you know, you're all putting a lot of work in. And, you know, since these guys are not at the front of the pack, I don't think they have the same moral obligations to be as, you know, responsible and morally aligned with being a pro athlete. And I'm sure, like, I remember reading articles back in the day that doping in age group triathlon was massive, but not near the front of the pack. And these guys are out there just juiced to the gills. Like, and I heard that Rylan was really upset just recently about how Hyrox doesn't test. Like, do you care about that stuff at all? Do you think about that stuff at all?
Maybe it has impacted me, but I haven't really considered it to have impacted me because I haven't lost money to someone who's like known for cheating. Maybe I lost a place or two, but unknowingly, I guess if you watch the news, you could be worried about everything in the whole world going wrong and whatnot. But I just try to, like, if it doesn't impact me directly, then I don't really think about it too much. I mean, when Rylan posted that a few months ago, like, that was the first time I even thought about it in a long time.
Yeah.
But I could see, like, if your ego is based around you winning your age group and stuff, and that's what you think is going to get you to the next level, then, I mean, and there's no, like, recourse or policing, then there's no way to stop people from doing it. But if, I mean, would it, other than Woodsy getting popped for DHEA, like, who knows, like,
I feel so bad about that. That
I know. The one guy, like, that's the only guy. Like,
we won the team world title. And DHEA is, like, useless. It's like, I think he was aiming to get DHA, and he bought the DHEA and was taking it, and it popped. And it's, like, a non-contributor. Like, it doesn't matter at all. Like, it's kind of like maybe, like, libido medicine. Mm-hmm. And Woodsy at the time was, you know, he's on the edge of 40. And I don't know if he was taking it for his libido or if he really truly grabbed the wrong container, DHA, DHEA. And, like, there was a ton of backlash on the guy. And I was on his team, and I didn't even care about losing the supposed team world title, which was dope to get in OCRWC. But it's just like, damn, dude, like, this sucks. I think that's the only time anyone's ever popped in our realm.
Yeah. As far as I know. And it, like you said, after, like, that came out, like, I'm not checking to see the banned substance list. Like, playing college sports, you're just looking for NSF labels on everything because D3 is not testing. Maybe they are occasionally if there's, like, a reason to, but when I was a freshman, we had Division I soccer, so they got tested all the time. But, like, it was not that. We didn't have coaches that were like, oh, you guys need to take this so you get bigger, stronger, faster. But if someone was experimenting, they weren't, like, telling everyone about it. So it's not – you're not trying to draw light to yourself. So
that whole industry is a scam. That whole industry is a scam. Like, I'll probably never get the stuff batch tested. Like, do you think really that these supplement companies have the time to just be pouring in free testosterone and stuff into our drinks? They're like, oops. Oops, oops, oops. Like, no, they're mixing up thousands upon thousands of pounds of powder, and the likelihood of you getting enough of a dose with regularity that would manipulate your body in a positive direction is insane. And then second of all, the fact that they are pouring that stuff in there to begin with out of their own pocket like a crazy person is insane. It's insane to think that. It's just a money-making racket. It's the same thing that I talked about, like, in schools having to use those scientific calculators. No one uses those fucking calculators, but somebody made a partnership with the schooling industry in the United States many years ago in a room, was like, let's do this and make some money off these children. And, like, it's crazy. Everyone probably in a storage bin in their house has multiple scientific calculators that have never been used past that 1 or 2 weeks in high school that you were told to use it. And the same scam falls into the nutrition industry. Like, we went to our first ever event. People are not going to like that I say this, but I'm going to tell you it with absolute honesty, and I'm bringing it up because I don't give a fuck. We went to our first ever event where we put a booth, and there were so many Jewish people that came up. They're like, we would really love to take this if it was kosher certified. And I'm like, is there a racket going on right now where you guys get a kickback from the kosher certification board for being the person that tips us over the edge? Because listen, I go check through our list of order sales. I almost never see Jewish names coming through. There's no Goldstein buying our supplements. It's just not happening. There's so few Jewish people in the entire world that it's not a metric that we're concerned about. And the fact that many people from an event came up and were like, we would like this. I'm like, this,
but it's not kosher certified.
Is a scam. Them, huh? I'm like, they are all working together with a kickback thing. And I was mind blown. Like someone was like, hey man, you should probably really do this. And I was like, you're an idiot. Like you are getting bamboozled by these people right now. And I've been contacted by like tons of people that are like, hey man, we'd love to sell your product to like college kids. Like I've got a lot of connections, and also I can get you a really good rate on this. And I'm like, it's a kickback. It's all a kickback. These people are salesmen trying to get us.
Are you talking about the certification that you would go through to like be able to have the college kids use it, but they have to be whatever that testing is. That's like 10K to just get the certification it's good.
Meanwhile, all these college lacrosse players are like doing lines of blow and testosterone.
The tests are going to pop everything else.
Everything
the
else.
PEDs are not the issue.
Oh, Hunter's creatine powder.
Gave me this damn chest, citrulline.
This citrulline's giving me chest hair to my eyeballs. Like, you know, like, no, you guys, like the whole industry is such a scam. And the craziest part about it is it has to be single batch tested for every single batch that you buy. So it's like it's a freaking bullshit. I'm not doing it. I'm never going to do it. Come get me, bro. I'm up here in the mountains. I'll freaking toss you around.
So you don't want to invest your own money of putting PEDs into your stuff and not tell anybody about it?
Yeah.
It probably drives sales.
I'm just in a pair of ass chapped over a cauldron of powder, just mixing it up, pouring in all my testosterone. And
you know, it'd be a great way to lose even more money. Let's put test in it and not charge anything for it.
It's such a scam. I've learned so much about business in the past couple of years that like, I'm not saying I'm a genius by any means, but it takes you a while to stub your toe enough times. You'd be like, wait a second, something's going on here. Is there anything that you do in your personal life that like has like moved the needle for you specifically? Like, is there something you're like, man, if I could just like go back and look at my career, I really have always liked eating this, drinking this, taking this. Like I've always like gone to bed and I wear like socks on my left foot, but not my right foot. Like, is there some kind of secret?
What's that superstition you do before the race?
Do you put potatoes? Dude, do you put onions in your socks to pull out all the toxins?
Never heard that one.
Dude, if you get sick and you put onions in your socks, it will suck out toxins through the bottom of your feet and like help you feel better. And they will turn black.
Oh. I'll try that on next time I get sick. No, I mean, I've included a lot more recovery stuff, which I think probably like 10 years ago, I would put in the Ben Greenfield's mysterious witchcraft methods. But now things are coming more to light, like red light therapy or hot cold plunges and stuff like that. And those kind of things. Like I've tried to utilize the new methods of things that people are doing to try to bounce back faster. Cause like you said, I don't know how you worded this before, but if you just keep beating yourself up all the time in training and you don't recover, whether it's eating, sleeping or else otherwise, then you're not going to be able to train as hard. And then you don't get the bang for your buck and you just overtrain and get injured or whatever. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, just taking care of myself outside of just my workouts. Cause I think growing up as an athlete, like, okay, we got to hit the gym and you go after school, you lift a bunch of weights, have your protein shake, go home, whatever. You stay up till 4 a.m. playing video games. You wake up at 6 to go to school and you do it again. Especially as we age, like I'm made friends with a lot of people that are in older age groups and you see higher performers at the higher age groups and you're like, what are you doing to stay in that shape? Because most people I know that are your age are not looking like that or performing like that, and try to learn from them what they're doing to get better, like longer warm-ups or more sleep or whatever it is, but trying to learn from other people too.
I really lean into Hobie Call Like, I met Hobie Call, I believe, when he was 32 and I was 22. Or, like, he was 34 and I was 22. And this guy then spent the next, like, 6 years beating the crap out of me. And then he showed up at Spartan Race World Championships at the age of 40 and dominated people. And I don't know if you remember, but the next season he went undefeated the whole season and then didn't do well at Worlds. So I call him now. And I have like this whole superfood routine. I'm going to do a plug for Hobie. You know, I don't know if anybody knows Hobie Call, but if you don't, you should get your shit learned up because he's a god. He is a god. He is the person who founded this whole movement and really like towed the line for a period of time that no one was invested in. And then he made it cool. This dude is the most winningest obstacle course racing athlete in history, at least in my mindset. There's people who probably have better records than him, but when the records mattered, he was the devil on top. And he's like just a very interesting, soft-spoken Mormon guy, like doesn't have the money to invest in like all of these fancy knickknacks that like, you know, the Ben Greenfield industry is trying to push on everybody. And the dude has like a couple superfood shakes that he makes and he's followed. And I started taking like in the past couple years and now I'm doing it very consistently and I'm very healthy and strong. And one of the things that he's done is he owns a company called US Shilajit. And this guy has been like going up into the mountains of Utah for years and extracting this special kind of like mineral paste that I call it mountain jam. It's like it kind of like gets pushed through. Basically, you understand that like there's fossil fuels, all this kind of stuff in there. It's just basically compressed stuff over time. Shilajit's one of these kind of best way to put it is like, you know, it's one of these kind of things produced over tons of time of compression that is super mineral dense and it's like a superfood. And this dude goes up into the mountains. It's becoming like a big buzz product all over the internet now. Ben Greenfield's a person pushing it. That stuff's all coming from like China and places and probably denatured and washed out for basically like extra margins. This dude goes up into the mountain with a pick himself, extracts it in the mountains of Utah, brings it down, processes it himself, and makes these beautiful little bottles. And like, it's one of the things he's been taking for years. It's like one of the more of like the health category, like maintenance and health rather than performance, which we're all focusing on. Because a healthy body is a performing body. An unhealthy body doesn't have the ability to perform. And I've been taking it for a while. And that guy is a hero to me. So if you guys want to support any business, invest in Hobie Call and get some of his mountain jam. Shilajit. US Shilajit. And I'm a big supporter, big fan now. Take it every day, twice a day. Sorry for the rant.
Very good. Wellness. Overall wellness, I think. That you bring that up has been more of a focus. I just followed kind of like a bodybuilder diet for earlier years, like chicken, lots of chicken, and then like kale, and then I have some carbs. And like I had a good physique, but my engine wasn't improving as well as I wanted to. And then I had to get more carbs. So I got a nutrition coach and then realized I need to eat like 800 grams of carbs when I was training for ultras. And I was like, that is a lot of, that's 3,200 calories a day just from carbs. And then get my protein on top. And that completely changed my mindset around food. And then recently for world championships, like I know a lot of stuff, but when your mind is full of everything, you kind of need to offload. I guess that's a new word for iPhones. Offload like some bandwidth. So I hired Corinna Coffin to do my nutrition for the last few months leading into Worlds. And she reminded me of a lot of things I used to know that I stopped doing. Not way back when was the bodybuilder diet, but she's the RD athlete. Like that's her thing. So fine tuning my carb needs and performance diet, but also keeping wellness covered as well. So that way you're not just living off of chicken and rice. And then now coming out of performance season into the off season, having a balanced meal plan. That's not as strict, but still keeps you performing well, but not having to be micromanaging your macros and all that stuff. So,
dude, you reminded me of something. Have you ever heard about the kale conspiracy?
Is it maybe, but not by that name. Like, it was supposed to be the most healthy thing on your plate. Now it's like, this is poison.
Well, yeah, so that's it. It's pretty crazy to track. And kale, like, up until 2013 was a nothing vegetable. Like, it was a nothing vegetable. Actually, the biggest purchaser in the United States was a fast food chain that would put kale around its, like bar, like a little salad bar, as a dressing to make it look nice. And all of a sudden, like, a PR agency got involved with kale and just spiked the value of it. And, like, all these celebrities started, like, talking about kale. And then all of a sudden it comes back and it's like, everyone's like, no, this is just basically like, it's like, it might as well just be like lemongrass. It's not that great for you. It actually has like a lot of these like kind of phytotoxins in it that make it very hard to digest. And it's amazing. It's so amazing. The marketing funnels that are surrounded by the world, like essential amino acids. Do you remember like about a year ago when essential amino acids was like off the charts? And they're like, it's essential. Like, if you're not taking it, you're essentially fucking yourself over completely. Like, you are ruining your life. And do you remember a couple of years ago with CBD? Everyone's like, yeah, if you're not taking CBD, you're going to die in the most miserable way possible because CBD is the only thing that can help you. And I, God, this stuff drives me absolutely nuts. And I sit here and I'm like, are we all crazy? We got to start to be a little bit more aware of what the hell we're eating and doing.
If you look at the cycles, there's a bunch of Netflix things that look at more of the history of marketing and nutrition. And like, one decade was the low fat. And then they're like, oh no, now we're in keto. We got to go high fat. And then like, it speaks to what you just said, but it's all marketing. And how are we going to change everything? And what are we at? We're supposed to know the most we've ever known. And our obesity rate is the highest it's ever been. So clearly we're doing the right thing
by getting people fat. Well, it's good that you got a nutritionist. I think like one of the things I've recognized is like, we say this often, if you're going to invest money in signing up for the race, flying to the race, getting the hotel, buying the $200 super shoes, buying the Garmin watch, training all the time, having the gym membership, like why do you not invest a little bit of money in getting yourself like a coach or a nutritionist? Like the thing that's like actually going to take this cobweb of a life that you have and align it so that when you show up, you can actually do well. And people are like, yeah, so disillusioned. They're like, oh, dude, I took an Orange Theory class and I did a Decafit. I know what I'm doing. All right. Like I did one Hyrox. I am now a hybrid coach myself, actually. Like I'm a banker most of my life, but during my free time, I'm elite hybrid coach. You're just like, what the hell is going on? I think just most people don't know how to, and even yourself, like you've been an athlete for many years. You've been very invested in this. You've had many coaches and you had the guts to just be like, and clarity to be like, I'm actually going to reach out to a nutritionist and I'm going to get this fixed up. And I was just saying, like, you look very slim and trim lined up. And like, and, you know, you obviously showed up with a lot of power and got the results that you wanted. You have 5 world titles now. I'm going to for sure validate one of them. I don't know about the other 4.
That's okay. I have 4 of these bad boys.
Are these golds?
They're batons for all my team's victories. This is our prize for teams. They're all gold as you can see. And then I got my triangle for the men's.
Very cool.
First place elite.
I'm
And then I got a huge ram. I don't know. It's here somewhere in the gym, but it's not at the desk, so.
I think the only thing that I can applaud Decafit for is the fact that they do a really good job with their post marketing with that triangle and those gold things. I've won Hyrox so many times and they give me like a bus token and like a beer coaster. I'm like, what the fuck is this? I was like, you guys should be smart that like literally people should want to put this stuff up in their gym. It's a great marketing pull. Like there's a ton of things around it. We should want to be able to celebrate this. Remember when Spartan Race used to give you those gigantic, annoying wooden blocks? Like, what the heck is this? I was like, I don't want a chunk of wood that I have to fly home with. I used to throw them out every single time I got there. And the race director would just like DM me and be like, what the hell is this, man? Why'd you throw out this metal chunk of wood? Well, dude, I had a really good time catching up with you. I hope you continue to slaughter the field. Like, you should use this skill set and just hone in, man. Like, be the dude to beat. Don't don't get excited and just be like, oh, I did well on this. Now I'm going to go back to ultras and go over here. Like, stay aligned, stay focused. Cause dude, you clearly have shown that you can beat these guys. And once you just cut a little chink in their armor, dude, most of them don't have the psychological strength to just like toughen up. They just start leaking like a balloon. So you got them once, dude. Now they're scared. There's blood in the water. Just saying.
Be the shark.
Yeah, dude.
I will. I'm gonna try some. They're doing Go Rock for Strong and Mile this year, so I'm gonna dabble in that. But my qualifying time for DECA Strong Worlds for 24 is already in at 10:48, so that'll lock me in for Elite. But I just have some fun keeping the station sharp and building the engine. I gotta get my my ski down to 130 for 1K pace like you, but. Other than that,
I'll just give you it's better to do like we had this Eric Murray guy on. It's better for you to do like 6 times 90 seconds, like absolutely kill yourself with 3 to 5 minutes rest between, than it is to just completely nonsensically just do more and more volume. Because in reality, in your sport, you have to be able to sustain wattage at a level that is around 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to be doing this Tour de France workouts that are so entirely long. And I think so many people like sit there, like I see people training for high rocks by putting so many plates on their sled and just like pushing it for a video. And I'm like, you still suck. You are like, you still suck at the endurance side of thing, which is the entire aspect of the race. You can push a ton of weight, but you are still 15 minutes behind me in the race. Like, I don't ever do sled pushes. And if I do sled pushes, I do very specific endurance bouts. And I have to like calculate it and time it and everything. Like, when I see people push a bunch of weight on a sled, I'm like, you're an idiot that I'm going to fucking nail next race. Like, can't wait. Like, keep on putting on plates, champ. So for you, like, I was coaching you, just very simply put, rower, skier, assault bike, 90 seconds efforts with 3 to 5 minutes rest in between. And you have to hold such high wattage, and you're going to have to do a block of this for like 8 to 10 weeks and just see where you can go. And then you do an endurance block, and then you do a threshold block, and then you do a lactate intensity block. And you should be able to come in with wattage. Like, you have more power than these guys. You just need to have more stay power. Mm-hmm. Fuck them up, dude.
Yeah,
I got that on the bike. The end of the show.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Hunter.
You'll crush it, boys. All right, everybody. If you love what we're doing, first of all, so support Hobie Call. Check out Bubbles. If you guys want to get some training, check out House Training. Bubbles has got some training too there. Another thing we got going on, if you want the best supplements in the entire world, non-BS, non-kosher certified, non-NFS certified, because we're not idiots, check out our supplements. They're not BS biohacking ingredients. They're the ones that move the needle and help out your life. So if you're training in this kind of lifestyle and you want to perform in these kind of races, these are exactly the products you want to take. Guys, I have to piss like crazy, so I'm out.
Later.
Later,
bro. Have a good morning.
Later. Bye.